In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Dig Deep episode. And I think, as usual, we can explain what the Dig Deep episode is. Shan?
Oh, over to me. So, this is the episode where we quite literally dig deep into our sisterhood, dig deep into our friendship, and we ask each other a series of questions. Sometimes we may laugh, sometimes we may cry, sometimes we may reflect. But it's actually a really good episode. And we also encourage you guys to ask some of the questions to your friends, to your families, to your cousins, to whoever.
Unapologetically Black.
So I was on the internet, the interweb, Beyonce's internet the other day, and people were talking about Ubers, and they're talking about where do they sit in an Uber. And I thought this was an obvious thing, like where you sit in an Uber. So I wanted to ask you, where do you sit in an Uber?
In the back seat.
No, but like where? Back left, back middle, or back right?
I would say either back middle or back right. So the side, the passenger seat side, not behind the driver.
So that's left.
Yeah. Sorry. In Jamaica is the other side.
No, you drive on the same side as us.
Yeah. But our cars are not left-hand drive.
But you're still left to the driver.
Yes. I sit on the side that the driver is not on. Whatever side that is, that's I sit on.
You sit on the left. You sit on the passenger seat by the back.
Yes. Or in the middle. Sometimes I'll sit in the middle.
So this is why you're a villain, okay? Why would you sit in the middle for the driver to slam down and you go through the window?
No, I just think sometimes if I'm like sprawling out on the back seat, which sometimes I do, especially if it's a long drive, sometimes sitting in the middle is a little bit more comfortable.
Really?
I don't actually, and I know that you're supposed to sit behind the driver actually to make someone more conscious of the fact that they should drive carefully. Like that's the advice that people give.
Really?
Yeah. So when you see those like buckle up seatbelt adverts, they usually tell you to sit behind the driver, because the driver will be much more conscious and aware that if they break up, your head's going into their back seat, which will then propel them into their windshield.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Because I saw this on Twitter, yeah, and I saw people say in the middle, and I just thought, you are the villain, because who would sit there? And then some people were saying they sit behind the driver, so that if the driver ended up being a bit weird, they could just ruffle up, tussle them down, strangle them.
Oh,
and then I was thinking, where do I sit, yeah? And I normally sit to the left, to where you sit. I normally sit on the passenger, right, behind the passenger seat. because I need to see everything that's going on.
Well, I was going to say that's the same thing. I like to have sight, line of sight of the driver and what he's doing.
Because like, yeah, what if you're texting on your phone trying to kidnap me? I will know because I can see from where I'm sitting.
Yeah.
And then some people also said they sit in the front. And I was like, who does that? But you know what? I do that. Like, sometimes I actually do that.
Even when you're by yourself, I'll sit in the front if I'm with a group of people and I need to be the one that's like, I'm probably the tallest, so I'll sit in the front seat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If there's nobody in the car and I'm sitting in the front seat.
Let me say something about Jamaican cabs. So guys, in Jamaica, their taxis, not all of them, not the Ubers, but the taxis are the wildest things in the world. You get into a taxi down the road, but it's almost like, it's not even a taxi. There's like 8 people in this taxi, yeah? So we was going out, me and my friend was going out, and the man was waiting outside our hotel, and we was like, oh, can we come in? And he was like, yeah, no problem, come in. And we're like, cool. So then he says to my friend, get in the back, yeah? Now my friend is taller than me, but a lot slimmer.
Right.
And then he says to the guy that's in the front gets out of the car, and he says to me, get in the front. So I'm assuming the guy in the front is not sitting down in the front, innit? Because I'm big. And you're telling me to go in the front and you've told my friend to go in the back. So I get into the front and I'm sitting cozy, yeah, and I'm going to close the door and the man's like, no, I'm coming in. I'm like, what? So where do you want me to sit? So I was sat in the middle, like as in my hat, my leg was over the guest stick and he was doing all these moves. And the whole time I was thinking, I don't want to cuss nobody because I'm now in the taxi, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, you lot are wild. Like I'm actually floating midair trying to drive.
No, there are specific cab companies that I use. One in particular, actually, there's only one, which has been around since time immemorial, called On Time Taxi or an Uber. But like,
are they actually on time?
Yeah, they typically.
Okay, but yeah, the Uber. I was in Mobay then, and the Ubers, they don't have Ubers down there.
Oh yeah.
The Ubers in Kingston. Amazing. Shout out Sky. I gave her the podcast, so if she's listening, shout her out. I loved her. I ended up just calling her for private taxis because I was like, aww, you are lit. And she was a woman as well, so I was like,
yeah, 100%. Okay, interesting. I haven't taken Ubers that often in Kingston, but I've never had a bad experience with them at all.
And another thing that was on my mind that I definitely wanted to bring to you, because I feel like out of all my friends, you're the friend that I mainly go to when I need help with like cooking or ideas about seasoning, dishes and all of that, yeah? So I was thinking about the seasoning paprika.
Interesting.
I need to understand, how deep is that seasoning to you? Because when you look at recipes, yeah, they always say paprika, paprika, paprika. And I'm like, I don't actually know what it does. Like when I'm cooking, I never think, oh, this just needs paprika or a little bit more paprika and it'll taste nicer. But like every recipe without fail, paprika is on there. And right now I'm trying to do my like vegan diet. Yeah. So because of that, yeah, I'm following a lot of recipes because I've never been vegan in my life and I need the flavor to be flavoring. But it just made me think like paprika is really got main character syndrome in the seasoning world. But for me, it is like, I don't understand what it does. Do you think it does anything?
So I've had thoughts about this myself, so I'm glad you brought it up. I always like to say that paprika is like white people's all-purpose. So it has something, but it's so mild that you can't actually tell what it is.
Right.
So where we use all-purpose, white people use paprika. That's like their seasoning that can go on anything and everything. However,
okay,
what I tend to use paprika for is things that don't need additional salt or pepper, but they just need something. I can't even articulate what that is.
I know it's paprika on sweet potato wedges. So if I want to make sweet potato wedges, I dash a bit of paprika, a bit of black pepper, a bit of salt, and I'm like good to
go. It makes a difference.
But outside of that, I could really not live without it. But yeah, every recipe, paprika, paprika, paprika. It's like they've got shares in all the seasonings. I don't understand.
You know what it is as well? I use it in my anything Mediterranean. I feel like I use a little bit of paprika as well. And if I'm making pasta sauce. For some reason, I feel like paprika makes a difference, which will be on our TikTok page very, very soon, by the way. I have my homemade pasta sauce coming forward. But yeah, fries, typically anything that you want to use, all because all purpose is high in salt content, right? And we just dash it on there like it's going out of style. But if you want to cut back on your salt, and use something as an alternative to all purpose to bring the flavor, to make the flavor milder,
yeah,
paprika is the way to go.
Can I just quickly shout out a brand that we're not sponsored by, but if they want to sponsor us, they can, and that is Jamaica Valley. Okay, so they're actually a Jamaican owned brand, and I use them religiously. You can buy them on their website, which is probably like jamaicavalley.com, but I buy it on Amazon, and their all purpose season is banging. And they do so many different seasonings, and they don't have high salt, and all the things that you don't want to have in a seasoning, they don't have it either. I don't know what it is, because I just buy it,
like MSG and that kind of thing,
all of them things. Yeah. But their seasoning's wicked. Like if I'm cooking something and I'm like, this is missing something, and I'm not really sure, I'm like, let me get their all-purpose. And I use other all-purpose brands. It's not they're not like the exclusive one that I use, but I know that when I use that, I know I can trust it, and it's going to be probably the most healthier option. So yeah, just thought I'd shout that out.
I'm on a journey to start making my own seasoning. So like my own green seasoning, my own jerk. I'm going to start blending and putting things together. I've been doing a lot of work in the kitchen, so I'm excited to see what the outcome of that will be over the next several months.
So now I've got my things off my chest. Do you have anything you want to get off yours, or how are you feeling?
I'm good. I feel like there are lots of things happening in the news, or that have been happening in the news, that have been pissing me right off.
Mm-hmm.
But also quite exciting. Let me start with the thing that's pissing me right off. For those of you who don't know who Claudine Gay is, she is the first...
I don't know who she is. So okay. For me...
So she's the first Black woman president of Harvard University, which is one of the most prestigious universities in the US and in the world, actually. I mean, not even say in the US, in the world. She recently was in an interview where she was asked about students on campus who were being anti-Semitic as it relates to what's been going on in Israel and Palestine. She responded by saying, we don't advocate, you know, anti-Semitism at all. However, we do advocate for free speech, and people are entitled to say what they feel like they need to say. Following on from this, which is in accordance with the Harvard guidelines of, student handbook, whatever, she's subsequently been fired because she's been accused of being anti-Semitic, and also because she has some inconsistencies in some of her academic publications.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny about this is that the person who spearheaded her firing, his wife has now been accused of plagiarism in her academic work. But she's not being, and she doesn't work at her, I think she was at MIT or something, but she's not at threat of being fired from any jobs or canceled in any way, shape, or form. And it's brought up this whole conversation about affirmative action and whether or not people should be allowed to, whether or not affirmative action works, and they're calling Claudine Gay an affirmative action hire. And it's pissing me off because I'm sick and tired of Black women being villainized for things that white people do all the time. She never said anything that was anti-Semitic, but she's now being painted as, what's the right word, an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who has written anything knows how annoying it is to cite references. She has a few inconsistencies, which I'm pretty sure that anybody who's ever written anything that's rooted in research has. And now she's being basically accused of plagiarism.
Inconsistencies how? As in, like, she said this is cited by Rashan Roberts in 2013, but it wasn't. It was actually Leanne Levers in 2018.
No, like, she may have put things in brackets to say that she was going to cite something, but never put the citation. Or yeah, the dates might be wrong on some of her citations, but she's not co-opting anybody's ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And if we were to do that across the, and let's be clear, there are many, many, many former presidents of colleges and chancellors and exec board, you know, people who have done far worse than what she did, which is basically avoid answering a question. Or she did answer it, but not in the way that people expected her to answer it. And now she's fired. And now I don't know what her career will look like because some white man decided to hold her accountable instead of holding his wife accountable.
Yeah, so what's going to happen to his wife?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And that's the annoying part, is that the standard that we are being held to as Black women and as Black people in general is nowhere near the standard that others are being held to. And I think to use that as a way of undermining affirmative action, which so many people who are well-equipped and very, very, very educated and very smart have used to leverage themselves into amazing positions that they're deserving of, but because of institutional racism, they would have never had the opportunity to. And let me just remind people that white women benefit from affirmative action too. It's not just mm-hmm. minorities in according to race, it's all marginalized groups, which includes white women. So yeah, that's my rant. I'm just sick and tired of being held to a standard that is unreasonable and unfair.
Sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of the issues that impact Black women. I hear you. Because even as you were saying, I was just thinking of loads of other examples in my head. And I was just thinking, like, when does this stuff change?
Posted something online the other day about this woman talking about her affirmative action. She also went to Harvard, Joyanne Reed. She's like an MSNBC reporter. And she was saying that when she got to Harvard, the very first class that she got into, there were a group of white students who questioned her being there. And it reminded me of the story that you've told previously about going to university and getting a scholarship and everybody questioning why you got the scholarship simply based mm-hmm. on the fact that you are a Black woman. And I'm just like, people think that these stories are stories in isolation, but look at both of you on opposite sides of the pond and having the exact same experience, also mm-hmm. decades apart, because this woman is a lot older. And yeah. It's like, how much has changed and why do you think that people are still complaining and people have the nerve to say that like racism isn't a thing or sexism isn't a thing? I'm like, here you have two people experiencing the exact same thing in two completely different environments and circumstances. It's like you can't make it up.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but we just wanted to say if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button.
Unapologetically Black.
Okay, so let's get into the questions.
Yep.
In terms of our relationship, when do you feel the most secure?
That's a good question. When we're eating. And I know that sounds weird, but every time we sit down to have a meal together, I feel like safe and comfortable and at ease. Like, I feel like some of our best conversations are had when we are out at dinner or when you've come over and I've cooked. Yeah. When we're really? Alone eating. Yeah. Eating and alone.
That is so niche. Do you feel like that with everyone when they're eating?
No, not necessarily. Like if you asked me about my other girlfriend, Kemi, I would say it's mm-hmm. when we're watching TV and lounging in the couch.
It's interesting how there's an activity in both answers.
Yeah, but not always. I mean, there are other people that I would say that, you know, we don't have to be doing anything. But I think it's also the way in which our relationship developed and came about. Like, so for my young childhood friends, my girlfriend Catherine, for instance, I grew up just being around her all the time. Like, she was always in my space. And so she and I actively, when we're spending quality time together, don't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like because we have a separation between, you and I have a separation between business and friendship that has a tendency to overlap. I think the times when we're one, not talking about business and we're purely just having a good time is when we're eating and drinking cocktails.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That makes sense now. When you first said it, I was like, food!
And we're both foodies.
I was like, I know I like to eat, but come on.
No, and we are both foodies, so we're both doing something that we enjoy, right? Like, it's not just something that mm-hmm. I like. It's something that we both like. Okay, I have a very interesting question that follows on from that, actually. What do you see as the next steps in our relationship?
I don't know how to answer it in a short way, so it's going to be a long answer.
Fine.
You know, our relationship, it's a bit tricky because there's two sides to it, isn't it? There's the business side. And then there's the friendship side. And I feel like when we do dig deep, sometimes I answer questions from the business side and sometimes mm-hmm. I answer it from the friendship side. And I don't really know how to switch off the hat, especially because you haven't really spent so much time recently doing like just friend stuff. So I'm answering this question from the business perspective. That's my disclaimer. But I feel like we're in a season of preparation right now. I feel like we're really clear on, I feel like last year we became really clear and really defined about what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
This year we're putting in all the steps and all the actions. And then the following year, maybe the year after that, we're really going to see a massive transformation where we're going to look back and be like, we thought 2023 was good. We won those awards, but look at 2026.
Yeah.
So I feel like in terms of the future of our relationship, I feel like we're being prepared to launch into something that we can't even fathom right now because it's actually bigger than us. And like all the work we do and everything that we do is never self-centered in ourselves or like our own gratification.
Mm-hmm.
That I actually can't even tell you what it looks like. I just know that we're in a season of preparation. Because I feel like as well, we've become so much more intentional and so much more clear on what we're doing. And I feel like we've always had a passion for the work we do. But I think in the last maybe 6 months, we've become really more intentional about it. Like we've stripped back stuff, we've stopped mm-hmm. doing tips so many things we was doing before because we kind of realized it doesn't actually benefit us to become burnt out and then try and serve a community, and actually there's other ways we can do it, and I think there's a lot of power in that.
100%. You know what's funny, when I saw the question, I was just like, the first thing that came to mind is we're gonna start making money. Those are our next steps in this relationship. But in what you said, I think it becomes all the more important for us to then also make time for the friendship piece, which you've said to me in the past week or so, I think, is like, we need like conversation that's purely just friendship based. Because, you know, when you watch these movies or these bios of like people who make it big or people who are successful in life, they lose sight of their friendship or they lose sight of the people that are around them that they can trust and take advice from. And so I think while we're planning, instead of waiting until it gets to the point where, you know, we're successful and doing what we're doing well and at scale, it's a good time to make sure that we're integrating the friendship in the planning pieces as well.
Yeah, and I think it's changed because before we would do business stuff that was in person and then you'd always be like, let's get food. Or like before we would start whatever we're doing, we'd probably be talking about something, catching up. Do you get what I mean? We'd always have those little things. So I think we probably didn't realize how much friendship stuff was intertwined with work. Whereas I feel like now we don't really have that. But I think because we're both aware of it and we both actually want to do it, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's more just a season that we're in about just becoming more intentional in that way.
And I think we've talked about it. Like, I think we've talked about, you know, you visiting Jamaica and me obviously making sure I'm making trips back to the UK and us doing like girly trips and traveling more. And so I think all of those things will naturally become. And what we did this last time when you came to Jamaica over the holidays was we made sure that we front loaded all of our work so that we actually didn't really need to talk business when you were here.
Yeah.
And so I think just doing those things, as you said, being intentional about making space and time is actually a good way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. So it's me now. If you could have any job in the world, what would it be and why? I think this question's quite interesting because I feel like you genuinely do love everything that you do now. So I actually have no idea what you might say, because I also don't really think you're someone who's like, and I could be wrong, you might challenge this, but I also don't feel like you're someone who's like, maybe not tried things out of fear or stuff like that. So yeah, I'm interested to see what you're saying.
You're right. I do love almost everything I do now. And I would say actually, and I'm sure everybody has this thing, but you know, when I was younger, you know, everybody wants to be like the first female DJ. Like I desperately wanted to be a DJ when I was younger and didn't do it out of fear. Right. Cause I don't know. I didn't think I'd be good, or I didn't think I'd have like the mic kind of techniques to talk on the mic while DJing, all of that stuff. And it's funny because one of my girlfriends, big up to DJ Quenchy, is now a DJ kind of on the latter side of life. Like she's in her maybe late 20s, early 30s. But if I had one dream job that I would do, even now to this day, actually, is I would love to have worked in A&R. So like finding artists really? And musicians. Yeah. So I think that I have, and other people have said this to me as well, that I have a really good ear for good music. Like I'm finding new people and new songs and new talent. And I would love to have been able to like find artists and curate their careers accordingly and kind of push new singles and found new tracks for them to work on. And if I had the money to invest in artists that I really believed in but hadn't been given a chance, that's what I would have done.
The thing is that I think there's not really anything stopping you now, but in a different way. Because when you were saying that, I was like, you could literally use our TikTok to discover new artists. Like that could be
a
video that you have where it's like Friday's pick of the week and you have someone where you showcase their music. Because I also think that sometimes like when you make your hobbies or your interest into the way you make money, it kind of gets rid of that. I've had to be really conscious of that. Like there was lots of things I enjoyed doing. And when I was younger, my mum encouraged me to like make a business out of it, which I don't wrong her for, because it's given me a lot of entrepreneurial, it's given me my entrepreneurial spirit that I have now. So I'm very thankful for it. But I realized really early on that those are things that I really loved doing, but I didn't want to make money from. I just enjoyed doing it. So I feel like maybe you could still incorporate it within what you do now in some way.
Well, it's funny because I ended up marrying somebody who used to work in A&R, right? That's what Barry did for a living for a long time. And so that's how we connected, was over music. And so there are still moments where I'll listen to somebody or I'll hear somebody perform in a studio for whatever reason, just because I've organically surrounded myself with creatives. And what I do try to do is broker relationships between people I know in the industry. And so I guess I do it kind of informally. But yeah, that pick of the week thing, I will definitely start doing.
And what about DJing? Is that something you would still have an interest in learning?
No,
not like to play as a professional. Like, would you want to learn the skill?
Not really. I mean, I think it's cool, but I think it's just not as high up on the list of priorities of things for me to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I also, in another life, wanted to be an actress, and I'm really, really not good at it at all.
Really? Maybe we need to get you some acting lessons.
I think it's too late. But yeah, I love creativity and I love various art forms. And I think the fact that I think I'm so good at identifying talent, it makes me a little bit sad that I don't actually have any talent.
Do you consider yourself an extrovert?
I consider myself an introvert, actually, or an extroverted introvert at the very...
So an ambivert then?
Is that the word?
Yeah, an ambivert is like the middle one. Because that's where I feel like I sit. And sometimes I call myself an introvert and my friends are like, no. And I'm like, the reason why you don't think I am is because you're my closest friend. So why on earth would I be quiet or insular around you when I've chosen to have you in my life? Whereas I feel like some people will see me. I'll be in a room and I can be the loudest person in the room. And I can also be in the room and be silent and be mute. And people will think like, oh, she doesn't speak. And it's like, no, I do speak. I'm observing you all.
Well, it's funny because now that I'm in Jamaica and I'm basically not starting from scratch, but I don't have many girlfriends here anymore. Most of them have migrated or left. And there are people that are now like inviting me out or like inviting me over to do things with their friends. And I'm like, but I don't want to get to know your friends. I have no desire.
Like, not at all.
Invite me out one-on-one and we will have the best time. But invite me to participate in a group of people that I don't know. Not my bag.
So when I was in Jamaica, the other Leanne on the day, I forgot your friend's name. Why have I forgotten her name? Who was Leanne on the plane with again?
Katie.
Right. So when I was in Jamaica, the other Leanne was like, oh, I'm going out today with Katie. Do you want to come? And I was like, no. I was like, I don't know her. And I remember looking at my phone and thinking, Leanne's not going to understand why I'm saying no. She's just going to think, like, why is Vishan being weird? But, like, on that day, I just wanted to be in my own space, like, with people that I knew. Who was Aaliyah, who I had come with? And I was like, I don't know her, Leanne. No, you have fun without me. And then I met Katie, yeah? And I was like, Katie's so lovely. And I remember I said to Leanne after, I was like, not going to lie, I wish I came out now.
You should have. I'm sure they had a great time.
She's so lovely. Like, I've even messaged her since that day. Like, she's genuinely so amazing. But it's just like, in my head, I'm like, I don't like being in those situations. I hate the uncomfortableness of like having to be around someone new. And then I get into, because of my social anxiety, I get into my head a lot. Mm-hmm. So like, you guys will think we're just eating a meal. I have been deep diving and analyzing this whole meal, even down to, should I ask this? Should I, like, it's too much. Like, it's emotionally exhausting for me to be around new people. So I was thinking, like, I can't bother to explain this to her, but no, I'm not meeting Katie and whoever this person is. And then I met Katie and I was like, I fucking love her. She's so nice. She's actually amazing. And she ended up being the creative director of the trip.
By the way, shout out to Katie. She's literally one of the loveliest people you could ever meet. Like,
no, honestly. And all my bag and holiday picks was because of Katie. Either she took them or she told me how to stand or she was the hype woman in the background. Like, every time we went to take a photo, I was like, if Katie's not here, let me not bother because they don't look nice without her. For real.
So funny. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you overcame that in the moment to meet one of the loveliest people alive. Okay. So here's another question. Mm-hmm. What's the emotional itch you think I need to scratch and why?
Okay, so I'm going to interpret the question as an emotion that you could maybe be encouraged to tap into more.
Okay.
And I think that's vulnerability. Yes. So I was thinking about some of my friends the other day, you being one of them. And I was like, Ross, some of my friends... there's really no vulnerability there. And I don't mean there's no vulnerability as in, like, I feel like I need to know more. Like, there's actually, I actually genuinely believe, yeah, and maybe I'm over familiar, who knows, but I genuinely believe I could ask you any question and I would get an answer. Yeah. Unless you felt uncomfortable, like, unless it was like a touchy subject and you was like, I can't talk about this, blah, 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 blah. But even then, it's still an answer. You're still communicating your boundary. But I genuinely don't think there's anything that I could ask you and I would... Do you get what I mean? So I don't mean it to the extreme as that I can't get... I can't, like, know you on a personal level. But I also feel like... I was just thinking about you the other day. And I was thinking, does Leanne struggle with vulnerability? But I could be wrong. Do you think you do?
Yeah, 100%. You do? Yeah. And it's weird, as you said, right? Because I am... pretty much an open book. And I'll share in the same way that I'll share with you, I'll share with my other friends, I'll share on this podcast, I'll tell stories, but actually sharing how I feel about those things is a very different thing. And I think it's Nina Simone that said it, to know something and to feel something are two very different things. So you can know something about me, but to know how I feel about it is a different situation. And I feel like I struggle to share that part of me openly. And not because I'm afraid to share with you specifically or with any of my other girlfriends, but I'm afraid of what opening up that emotion will do for me personally. Like, where will it take, what road will it take me down on? I'm like, I have shit to do. Like, I can't be bawling down the place And then I know that I have a shit ton of work that's looming over my head, or I have something else to do or errands to run. It's just like the day has to go on. And I know that's not very helpful because it's something that we encourage people to do. And even within therapy, like I still go to a therapist now, but even with therapy, I feel like my therapist sessions have become very like process based. Like this is what we need to do in order to fix X, Y, and Z without actually processing how I'm feeling about those things.
Not to go into therapy now, but why do you think you're like that? Do you feel like was there a time when you were younger where maybe you opened up? And then how you felt afterwards was something that was hard to take control of. Or maybe you opened up to someone and then they threw it back in your face. Like, what do you think was the trigger for that?
I think it's a series of things. I think, every time I've had a major event in my life, whether it's my own struggle with sexual violence or my experience, not struggle, my experience with sexual violence, or, my parents passing, any of those kind of major emotional events. One, the person that I've chosen to confide in was the wrong person and did not provide me with the support that I needed. And two, and this applies more to my parents than anything else actually, is that there is an overwhelming fear of me breaking down and not being able to build myself back up. Mm. So I think it's a balance of two, like, and it's not through any, for the record, I don't blame the persons that I've told and that they've not reacted well to my sharing. It's not their fault. I don't blame them. They weren't being intentionally mean or neglectful of my feelings. They just didn't know what to do. Mm. And it's funny, a friend of mine literally this morning, right before we got on to record, said to me, I think you fuel the negative because you're so afraid of feeling what you're experiencing in the present. I know.
That is deep.
And do you know how I responded? I gave them a thumbs up.
That's really deep.
Yeah. And it's true.
Say it again.
They were like, you're so afraid of, no, they said you fuel the negativity or you fuel your negative perspective because you're so afraid of experiencing what you're feeling in the present.
And to unpack that, what do you interpret that as? As in like, you just ride the wave of the negative stuff that's going on, because if you really deep it, you don't want to actually have to process what's going on.
Yeah, it's just my way of like intellectualizing things. So I'll weigh up pros and cons, or I'll be like, this is the alternative scenario. Like it's very outcome based instead of just being present in the moment and being like, this is what I'm going through and I just need to feel my way through this. Which in some cases might be a good thing. Like it may be something that's joyous and exciting and whatever, or it may just be something that's not great. But either way, I don't go on either side of experiencing things anymore.
That's really deep. I feel like I can relate to that for a particular thing at the moment, which is why I was like, wow, I feel seen, and it wasn't even to me.
Feel
like a little bit. Another question I wanted to ask you off the back of that conversation is, do you struggle with or do you experience hyper independence?
Oh yeah, for sure, definitely. And I'm also just compounded by that, incredibly stubborn. So if you tell, all my friends will tell you, if you tell me to do something, I'll likely do the exact opposite. So I remember there was, I think I mentioned this before, that I've never had so many people come out of the woodworks when I was about to get married to say like, don't do it, like, give me a chance or whatever it is. And one of my exes, who Barry doesn't listen to this anyway, so it's fine. One of my exes who was trying to convince me not to get married was just like, you know what, Leanne, get married. Please hurry up and walk down that aisle, because they know how much anxiety I get when people tell me to do something that I'm inclined to do the exact opposite. So
on the note of being told stuff, yeah. I don't know if I sent you this, but I saw a picture online. Actually, my friend sent it to me, and I felt really, like, not triggered, but taken back. And it's something that I still need to process properly. But essentially, it was a grid. Can you see it like this?
Oh, yeah. And it's, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
So it says, our triggers reflect our pain. And then it has a... On the left side, it says, if you often get triggered by, and has a list of things. Mm-hmm. And on the right side, it says, you might still need to heal from. And then it says a list of things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I sent it to one of my friends and she said she doesn't like being told what to do, which is literally what you just said. So I'm going to tell you what it says. So if you're often triggered by authority or being told what to do, it means you still need to be healed from being controlled or not feeling like you had a voice.
Interesting.
So I'm going to send you this because maybe you can unpack it in therapy.
Oh, please send it to me. I'm sure there are many other things on that list that apply.
Yes, there's loads. I read through the list, yeah, and I was like, And I was like, I wasn't expecting to be all of these. I was literally like, wow, yes. It made me even deep, like certain things. Like, for example, I think I said to you, either on and off the podcast, but I spoke to, not just you, I spoke to another friend about it as well. Recently, I'm struggling with, like, feeling like I'm being ignored, yeah? And, like,
yeah, you did mention it, yeah.
The way that it upsets me is not a way that anyone will ever understand. I think if people knew how much it upset me, they would be like, like, but,
are you
like, what the hell is going on? Yeah, like, it really upsets me. And I was trying to work out, like, where does this come from? And part of me realised in my self-diagnosis that I feel like it reminds me of my relationship with my dad as a child and feeling like my emotions was dismissed by not just him, but like everyone. I didn't really feel like anyone other than maybe my mom really took on board how my relationship with my dad, like being in and outside of prison, impacted me as a person. Like no one's ever discussed that with me. No one's ever said like, what was it like going to prisons to visit your dad? Or like, what was it like not? Do you get what I mean? No one's ever like actually had those conversations with me. So I feel like I feel like my emotions was dismissed ultimately. And I also feel like outside of that with him, just like certain conversations that I had with him, not now, like ages ago as a child, I didn't really remember. I think I spoke about like kind of feeling like we had a disconnect in our relationship a little bit.
Yeah.
And ultimately, when you have a disconnected relationship with someone, it kind of feels like you're being ignored or you're being dismissed, even if it's unintentional, or especially when you're younger, so you can't really understand or process it in the correct way. But anyway, the point is, I digress. That was my self-diagnosis. On that sheet, it also talks about feeling ignored.
Mm.
And I was like, light bulb moment. Here it is. And it actually made me think, like,
what does it go back to it.
So it says, actually, this is not the point that I meant, but it's on there as well. So the point that I meant was feeling unimportant to loved ones. Because when I feel dismissed or ignored, that's what it actually feels like. I just feel like I'm not being valued or respected and people don't care. I also struggle with feeling unimportant to loved ones in general, but I didn't really deep it as a thing until I read this sheet. And that says, an unavailable or self-focused caregiver. And then for feeling dismissed or invalidated, I don't have the invalidated side, it's just the dismissed. It said, not allowed to have or show emotion.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I feel like subconsciously, I probably made myself feel like I didn't have to show emotion. I didn't think it was something, because my primary caregiver was my mum.
Yeah.
And my mum was like the opposite of that as a parent. She was a feelings parent. How are you feeling about this? What's going on with that? Are you okay? Like, try to come home and your smile is not smiling. She wants to know why. So I had that as a parent, but then maybe like being the older child and then having a sibling, maybe I then started to internalize that I should maybe not mention certain things or not say certain things. Because I might acknowledge my mum's going through certain things or my mum's parent. Do you know what I mean? You know, like when you just take on adult issues that you actually don't need to. But it's not because an adult's burdening it on you. It's actually because you're just internalizing it because you're living within proximity of it. I think it was more like that.
100%. That's exactly what I did when my parents got sick, is that I just buried my own feelings about anything and everything because their feelings had to take precedence at that point, or I felt like they had to take precedence at that point in time. So when people are actually, it's funny because I guess by sharing just organically, people who are going through caregiving situations or the parents are sick or siblings are sick, they'll ask me like, what's the one piece of advice? And the one piece of advice is don't bury your feelings. Like, find a safe space to have an outlet that is separate from them or whoever the person is that you're caring for, because it's so hard to find yourself again after you've buried yourself for so long.
Sorry, I just feeling very attacked and triggered. That wasn't the point of this episode. Okay, moving on.
Is it me? Yeah, it's your turn. Your turn.
Okay, so this is my last question. What surprises you most about me?
That's a good question. What surprises me most about you? I think going back to this ambivert, extroverted, introvert thing is actually how like gregarious and engaging you are when you are in public settings. So knowing that you have, obviously you and I have talked separately about like anxiety, social anxiety, and being introverted and wanting time alone and now embracing living alone and all of that kind of thing. Is that like when we go out, you are the life of the party and you're funny and engaging. And obviously you're funny on one-on-one too, but it always surprises me how much you are like the life of the party, especially because I know that you have that social anxiety on the inside. Roshan's always a good time. Like, we always have a good time whenever we go somewhere. And also, you talk to strangers. Like, I actually don't talk to strangers at all, unless we're in like group settings where we're hosting an event. That's different. But if we're going out with friends, I am as quiet as a church mouse when I'm around people that I don't know, unless it's just like the three of us. So like the first time I met Aaliyah, I met her with just you. So it's easy for me to like engage and talk and get to know her. But if we were in a big group setting, there's no way that I would have gotten to know her. I would have just seen her as Roshan's friend. So yeah, I would say that you're one of the friends that I have that I don't need to worry about bringing into a circle that you're not familiar with.
Aw, that's cute. But do you know what's interesting about the point of like talking?
It's that it all the time, and it doesn't do it for me.
No, guys.
No balloons.
Well, on the podcast when we're recording, I put up a peace sign and randomly balloons, oh, they've gone now, just fall down like it's my birthday. It's crazy. But do you know what's weird, yeah, is that like I can talk to strangers and do things like that. But then do you know what I overthink about a lot, which happened to me this week? So I was at work, yeah, and I've started a new job and I was getting ready to leave and they're like, oh, we're going for work drinks. Oh my gosh. If you felt my heart was doing. I messaged the other Leanne, I messaged my friend Tash, I messaged my mom. I said, they want to go for work drinks. What do I do? I don't want to go. And they were all like, no, you have to go. And I'm like, no, I cannot. My hands are sweating. Like, I'm stressed. And I went and had a great time.
Yeah.
And everyone where I work is so lovely. But like for somebody else, let's say my friend Tash, yeah, she probably wouldn't talk to strangers in the way that I would. But she would thrive in that setting, like thrive. Whereas like I only spoke to the people on either side to me. And then like some people would get up and walk around to where I was. Because I was like, I can't get up. If I get up, I'm going to fall down. If I get up, this is going to happen. So it's crazy in these streets. This is why people don't
It's very interesting. Yeah. Like the only reason I know that you have social anxiety is because you've said it. And I've seen it obviously firsthand. But I would never guess, because when you're in settings you seem perfectly fine.
Look at me being the real actor.
Emmy award winning Roshan Roberts,
let them know.
Okay, last question for me is, what do you think I should let go of and why?
What do I think, Leanne? I was gonna say leavers, but it's not leavers anymore.
Yeah, I'm still leavers. I haven't changed my name yet.
Are you going to?
I think so.
To be continued.
What we've agreed on is that I will change my last name, but I will continue to be professionally known as Libas. So,
oh, that's quite common, actually.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's also your brand name as well.
Yeah. And I like my double alliteration, like the Leanne Libas, the Roshan Roberts. It just works.
Let them know. You see, when parents do that, it's because they know you're born to be a star.
Exactly.
It's because you're born to be a star.
And I'm not being funny, but my married name just doesn't quite have that ring to it.
That ring. Mm-hmm. No, sorry, I got distracted because I was thinking Beyonce is still Beyonce Knowles, isn't she?
No, she's Beyonce Knowles Carter.
But nobody says that bit.
They just say Beyonce because she's just Beyonce. But like Kim Kardashian, as another example, she was Kim Kardashian West for a while.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry. The question was...
What do you think I need to let go of and why?
So my disclaimer is, obviously no one's perfect. Okay?
Yeah,
that's
of course.
My disclaimer. And also, is that therapy can't fix everything. Okay? My lead into this is much worse than it actually is. And I feel like this is something that is actually a collective thing. Like, everyone should try and let go of this. This is not even... This actually applies to everyone listening.
It's fine, Roshan, just saying.
No. This is me. This is not my disclaimer anymore. That's me being genuine.
Okay.
But I think everyone has these things that we've been told from people that we kind of wear that we shouldn't wear. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, everyone has... these things. Let me think of an example that doesn't apply to either of us. Like, yeah, so someone, this is not to do with people listening, this is not to do with me or Leanne, this example, but someone might have told Becky, our pretend friend here, you should be quiet and you shouldn't speak up.
Yeah.
But actually, Becky is a burning activist and wants to speak up. She wants to create change. So because of that, she never lives that out because she's always been told she has to be this way. Whatever that is for you, I think you need to let go of. Because sometimes I feel like in recent times, there's things you've said, but I haven't really pieced it all together yet. And I'm like, this is not coming from adult Leanne. This is child Leanne.
Interesting.
I don't know it deep enough to be able to say distinctively, like, this is that and that is this. But I believe it will come in its own time. We don't have to rush things like that. But I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to. Like, we're told labels and we're told things growing up, sometimes subconsciously. And it's like, we have to let go of these things. Like, I'll give you my example, yeah? So I know that I talk fast. I know that. That's not a secret. And as a child, I was told I talk fast.
Yeah.
I still talk fast now. Okay? I've had opportunities that I didn't want to take as a result of people's comments in my ears about my speech.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for example, my uncle, till this day, still says to me every time I see him, even if I'm talking slowly, because I know what he's like, so I'll intentionally speak extra slowly around him, he'll be like, oh, you talk too fast. No one can understand you. And sometimes I want to be like, just shut the hell up. Like, I actually did a BBC podcast. I've actually presented a BBC documentary. Like, if the speech was that much of an issue, I would never have been afforded those opportunities.
Yeah.
But my point is that when I did those opportunities, people like him, they were in the back of my head that entire time. And they actually ruined that entire experience for me. Do you get what I mean? And like, when we get opportunities to speak publicly, it's people like him that have them in the back of my head. But I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it because I'm carrying that subconsciously.
I know exactly what you mean. Exactly what you
mean. So that's like one of my things I know that I need to unlearn and that I need to continue to work through. But whatever your version of that is, I feel like you should try and let go of that.
It's funny. I don't think I actually know what it is, but I know that it's a thing. Like my friend Dre, rest in peace, one of my closest and nearest and dearest, who I think in a very short period of time got to know me really well, very insightful guy. He used to say to me all the time, you're so attached to who you are that it's preventing you from becoming who you could be. And you know, he was always like, you're so attached to this one thing, which I won't say what it is now, but you're so attached to this one thing that it's also preventing you from exploring who you could be, which could be anything. And I remember one of the last messages, I'm going to read it because it's quite good. He sent it to me on my birthday, the birthday before he died. He passed away in the October, and he this was the April. And he said, "I don't worry about you that you'll be happy, but at the same time, I do. I think you'll be okay. And I think the idea of you being in Jamaica, because I was planning on moving home, will be on the return motion. I think you've extended yourself into the world so much, and now it's time to return to yourself. And I hope you find everything that you hoped for and so much more that you didn't."
That's deep. Especially as one of his final messages.
Yeah, literally one of the last messages that he, well, not last message, long, last like meaningful long messages that he sent me. And it's true, because I was so charted on this path of everything that I had hoped for that I didn't ever actually take the time to sit back and think about that, the fact that there could be so much more than even I anticipated, and opening myself up to actual possibilities that go beyond my own like sphere of thinking. And those, my sphere of thinking is very much pigeonholed or limited to who I think I am, rather than exploring who I could be. So I don't know what those exact things are, but I know it's a thing that I have for sure. So I don't disagree.
Well, maybe it's a thing that will come to the surface soon, because we're both, because I, as I said, like, I feel like I've acknowledged something, but I don't know what the something is. And you're saying within your own self, you know, there's a thing, but you don't know what it is. Do you get what I mean? So maybe it's something that in its own time will come out. And I don't think it's necessarily hindering you, but I feel like, you know, in this life is so mean. And if there's anyone that has to be kind to us, it really is ourselves and the voice that we tell ourselves. And I think that, you know, when you're younger, you plan out this life in your head of what you're going to be at 20 and 30 and 15 and all these ages. And I've definitely been through a phase where I felt like where I was wasn't good enough. And then when I started practicing this thing where I think, what would 13-year-old Shan think of you? What would 16-year-old Shan think of you? What would 18-year-old Shan think of you? And it's always like those three increments. And I always have lots of positive things to say. And I think sometimes there's a way to like heal our inner child. We have to go back to them and ask them what they'll think of us today, in a way to actually reassure ourselves and affirm ourselves of where we are now, and to know that it's okay and it's actually more than enough, even if it's not aligned with where we thought we wanted to be in the first place.
Very true. Very true. And I think that's the grounding thing, right? As long as you can look back and be proud of who you are, the details of it kind of don't matter. Because it doesn't have to be exactly what you thought it would be. It just has to be something that's true to the core of your character.
Well, that was a lovely episode, guys. I feel like we went through 15 emotions.
Considering that I often fail to explore any of them, I think this was a great episode.
Well, guys, thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.